You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. So last night, as Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown were squaring off for the third time, and millions of people were in front of their televisions watching Simon Cowell and Britney Spears do their thing on The X Factor, about 300-plus people were taking part in a theatrical and literary first in Lowell, Massachusetts, the boyhood home of Beat Generation icon, writer Jack Kerouac.
I looked to him. I wondered what some cadence is. I wanted to hear how he expressed himself on a spontaneous level. That said, I listened to all that, and then I tried my best to put that aside, because in the end, you want people not to connect with some memory.
Technical difficulty there. But what you were hopefully going to hear right there was MRT Artistic Director Charles Towers, who introduced the premiere performance of a play called Beat Generation. So this is a play that Jack Kerouac wrote that almost nobody even knew about until a couple of years ago. So with me to talk about how that play made its way from Jack Kerouac's head to a warehouse in New Jersey and then finally to the stage in Lowell, Massachusetts as the centerpiece of the 2012 Jack Kerouac Literary Festival are two of the men who are responsible for making that happen. Charles Towers, who's the artistic director of the Merrimack Repertory Theater. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Edgar.
And joining me by phone from Lowell is Paul Marion. He's the executive director of the Office of Communication and Cultural Affairs at UMass Lowell. How you doing there, Paul?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Hi,
so, guys,
Paul.
I want you to start by telling us a little bit about the story of how this came to be, because this is literally kind of a lost play and was lost for a long time. So maybe I'll start with you, Charles. You can get us started, and Paul, you can jump in when it makes sense.
Sure.
The story is apocryphal because no one actually knows the absolute details. So I'll tell you a story.
Yeah, most good stories are untrue. So we're off to a good start.
I'll tell you a story. So On the Road is published in 1957. He gets an incredible review in the New York Times and is an instant success after years of laboring at the typewriter. And all of a sudden, he's in this newfound place of fame. And either an off-Broadway producer asked him to write or someone else suggested he write a play. Probably just to capitalize on his moment in time.
Yeah.
And he thought, sure, I write a play. And he wrote it in either 2 days or 2 weeks or something. That's part of the story.
Right.
Knocked it out and peddled it around. There's stories that he tried to, that Lillian Hellman looked at it. We know for certain he tried to get Marlon Brando interested in being in it. He also wanted Brando to be on the road at the time in a film that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Got quickly discouraged at the slowness of the Broadway process for not producing his play, shoved it into a dresser drawer. That dresser somehow made it into a New Jersey warehouse, I think probably among his other effects after he passed away in 1967. And then in 2005, his still agent, Sterling Lord, great man, was in contact with John Sampas, who represents the Kerouac Estate. And long story short, they were just looking for any new unpublished material that they could find. Somebody sent an assistant out to New Jersey. They found this manuscript in this drawer that everybody had forgotten about because it was written once and never produced. And sure enough, it got published in 2005 once this thing was found. And first thing I thought when I heard about it is, hey, Lowell, Massachusetts, home of Jack Kerouac, we have got to do this for the first time. And we're doing it in a reading format, staged reading format, instead of a full production format, so that we can just simply bring his words to life. To me, there's something spiritual about having his words said for the first time in his hometown.
Yeah.
That's it.
Paul, does that make sense to you? Is that how it happened as far as you know?
Yes, absolutely. Just a little backstory, though. People don't typically associate Kerouac with plays, but it's interesting because as a young man, one of his early sort of literary heroes was Orson Welles, and what was it called, Mercury Theater of the Air, Charles?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, you know, he's very much a radio generation kid, and you know, and so he actually used to write like little one-act radio plays. And when he was 18, he wrote a short essay called "I Want to Write a Play." And in it, he says, I'm going to wait for a spontaneous burst of passion and rush to my typewriter and write about life as life is. And that's pretty much what he did for the next 30 years, mostly, you know, not in play form.
Right. So here's what's fascinating to me. You guys are dealing with a legitimate icon, right? I mean, we're talking somebody who is larger than life in the American landscape, both from a literary standpoint, in the music world, in the pop culture world. And actually, I'm going to bring in some sound here just to give a sense of how people, I think, a lot of people are about Jack Herrick, or a certain number of people are about Jack Herrick. Here's Tony Crane, who's the actor who plays the Jack Kerouac part in the play. And we'll get into the play in a little bit. But here's him. I talked to him this morning. He's in a performance now, so he couldn't be with us. But he was talking about how he came to... I asked him how he came to get this part in this play. And here's what he said about getting the part in the play.
I listened to him. I wondered at some cadences. I wanted to hear how he expressed himself on a spontaneous level. That said, I listened to all that, and then I tried my best to put that aside.
So let's try it again. This is a part. This is Tony Crane getting his part in the play.
I read that it was happening, and literally I ran to the phone to call a friend of mine who had worked here at one point and directed here, and I said, please, whatever you can do, please tell them that you know me and I'm the best person you ever worked with. And then that got me a meeting with Charles and told him in an extremely casual way that I thought it was a very good idea if we worked together on this project.
Yeah, so he literally jumped out of his skin when I asked him about it. He was like saying that he's jumping out of his skin. You hear that here, to play this part.
Yeah, he's a real Kerouac fan. Who knew? And the most bizarre thing is, I had no intention of casting people who looked like the main characters of Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassidy. It just happened to end up, I have two guys who look kind of like Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassidy. It's bizarre.
So for you both, is there an added pressure to this? This is a, you know, a legitimate American icon that people are incredibly excited about, that people know really well, and you're sort of putting something of his on for the very first time. It hasn't been done anywhere before. Is that more exciting, or is there more of a sense of pressure? Is it different than other productions?
It's absolutely different. The pressure was released only last night when the curtain came down, because we had a really terrific show, and there's seven more performances this week. But up till then, yeah, I felt a lot of pressure, not the least of which is... it's not really a play in the same way that we think of plays, and so we're putting it on stage, even though it's rarely Kerouac. If somebody asked me, what's it like? And I said, well, I think it's exactly what you would imagine if Jack Kerouac wrote a play.
Right.
You know, that's it. And plus to do it in Lowell and in his hometown. But it's all, you know, pressure is also excitement.
That's there's a certain amount of artistic risk, you know, when you're approaching a project like this. But there was also the excitement of UMass Lowell and MRT helping to complete, in a sense, the collected works of Kerouac. Because even though the play is available as a book, the incredible leap that Charles and all the cast were able to make from the page to the stage... just makes this a work in and of itself beyond what's on the page, and that is what's new. And that was the excitement. We didn't know how it was going to work, but it was fabulous last night.
Yeah, Paul, I'm curious. I mean, as somebody who knows Kerouac's work so well, and I'm always curious about this, especially with artists who have been gone for a long period of time. Certainly in the climate that we live in, there's money to be made, or there's an audience for stuff that sort of comes from the archives, so to speak. You know, you see this with a lot of musical artists, and I'm always curious about sort of going back and digging up something that's kind of unpublished. Of course, there was a Kerouac's first novel that never got published in his lifetime that reportedly he didn't even really like, that's been published. For this, does this fall into that category for you, or do you see this and say this sort of sheds new light on somebody's work?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, you know, my perspective is I'm what I guess they call a completist. I think if it's Picasso or Mozart or Kerouac, I think you want to see everything, you know, because it adds to an understanding of the artist's mind and soul. Yes, there is kind of aesthetic, ethical issues about what you're going to put out there. But in case of this play, I mean, he wanted to have it made. It didn't work out, and then it got put away. The other thing is Kerouac saved everything. And so if he, during his lifetime, kept all these materials, you had to believe that he felt they had value and would someday reach an audience. And I think those who come after have a certain responsibility to open those artistic doors.
That is Paul Marion. He's the executive director of the Office of Community and Cultural Affairs at UMass Lowell. And with me in studio is Charles Towers, the artistic director of the Merrimack Repertory Theater. We're talking about Beat Generation, which is a play that's happening right now at the Merrimack Repertory Theater. This is a work by Beat Generation icon, Lowell native, Jack Kerouac, never before done anywhere, being done for the first time.
Ethan Hawke read a segment of it in 2005 at the New York Public Library, but only a segment. So yes, this is the first time these words are being spoken aloud for an audience ever.
So let's get into the words a little bit, guys. I want to talk through this play a little bit. I saw it last night, and you know, for me, there's some familiar themes in it if you know Kerouac's work. Ones that strike me, religion, restlessness, and sort of struggling with meaning. These are three things that I'm seeing happening in this play. I want to kind of unpack those a little bit. And I want to talk about religion because religion's an interesting thing in Kerouac's life and his work. You know, David Brinkley, who's his biographer, you know, once sort of said something along the lines of, you know, people sort of get on the road wrong because they think it's about two people on the road looking for kicks, and it's really about two people on the road looking for God.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Kerouac talks about it being a story of two Catholic buddies roaming around. So this strain of Catholicism is important in him. And religion's a theme in this play. We have this third act where there's a bishop, and the whole time they're waiting for this appearance of this bishop. He's being talked about through the whole play. What's the role of religion in this play, Paul? And does that fit in with the rest of Kerouac's...
Yeah. You're exactly right. I mean, if you know, if you're familiar with Kerouac's work in general, this play presses a lot of the buttons, and you mentioned a number of them. But Kerouac was about the big questions. I mean, he was always asking, "How shall we live?" And what's interesting, you know, I found the play on stage. There was a sincerity, particularly in that third act, that you almost wouldn't. Anybody wouldn't talk or present the questions like that, you know, in 2012. But there was a kind of sincerity in Kerouac in trying to understand, you know, what's the meaning of life. It sounds corny, but that's you know, at the bottom of a lot of his exploration.
The first conversation between Milo and Buck, who are the characters based on Neil Cassady and Jack Kerouac, in the kitchen of their friend Jewel in the Bowery, which is the first act takes place in an apartment in the Bowery. The second act takes place at a racetrack in Queens where they have a misfired betting scheme. And the third act takes place in Neil Cassady's, Milo's suburban home where this bishop that you mentioned visits. But the first conversation is about religion. Milo starts in about his view of how things go, which is a really huge, complex thing he's imagined as some combination of Buddhism and Christianity where you're... And Edgar Cayce and astral bodies but where basically you have to work your way through karmic lives up to heaven. And Buck's, Kerouac's view is heaven is here on earth now, man. That's where, this is it.
Yeah.
And that's how it starts. That goes through the whole play.
Yeah, there's a character, I forget his name right now. He comes in the third act, and he has about like 4 cent lines. but he says, Kerouac has him say, in answer to the bishop, when he says, what do you think, in a sense, the meaning of life? And he says, well, I think people should love one another. And it's such a plain, simple statement.
Yeah.
And yet, in a way, it sort of prefigures the whole sort of peace and love generation that kind of comes, you know, 10 years later in the 60s.
All you need is love, said the Beatles.
Exactly.
In 67, 10 years later.
Yep. I mean, yep. In Kerouac's... his autobiographical sort of piece that leads to his book Lonesome Traveler, which is a collection of essays and short stories, he says, you know, always considered writing my duty on earth, also the preachment of universal kindness. And you got that, you know, in that one line that comes way at the end of the play. And it's like, is that what he really wanted to say?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with Paul Marion. He's the executive director of the Office of Community and Cultural Affairs at UMass Lowell. And Charles Towers, who's the artistic director at the Merrimack Repertory Theater. We're talking about Beat Generation, a play by Jack Kerouac that has been unperformed for more than 50 years, going on right now at the Merrimack Repertory Theater. Another theme in this play is restlessness, and this is kind of, I think, the thing that Kerouac's most well known for. On the Road being, you know, the seminal work, the thing that almost everybody knows, and that restlessness.
We say in our promotion, it's 5 years later, they're no longer on the road, they're still friends, and they're more beat than ever. And I really think that that's what this play is. It's about not being on the road. It's about the whole thing takes place in one day, in one location, New York City, three locations in New York City. They're older. Neil Cassady is now married with four kids. And it's what happens to the friendship between Neil Cassady and Jack Kerouac when they no longer can be on the road together. And you have to somehow grow up at some point.
I have a little piece of sound from the play. This, again, comes from the third act, and I think this kind of gets at that idea of that restlessness and also sort of gives you a little sense of the language and how it's being used. This is kind of in a moment where a bunch of guys are in this apartment toward the end, and they're trading stories, sort of these cowboy stories. Yeah. They're saying, now I'm the cowboy, and describing a scene. And this is when Buck, who's the Jack Kerouac character, takes his turn describing his cowboy moment.
I come looking, riding in. My father killed us. I know they're in town. I walk across the dry boards of the sidewalk, and my boots clunk, and my long spur jingle. I push open the swinging doors, and there's Bart now, and his brothers and cousins. And all the side, and they've got their guns out, and they've got me covered, and they're all gonna blast me. And they've got my father.
What'd you do then?
I turned into a ball of electricity! And they all dropped dead!
Fantastic.
So there you have it.
I turned into a ball of electricity and they all dropped dead.
So here's what I wonder about, Paul.
Yep.
It's the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
There's a move post-World War II toward a much more homogenized society. There was rules. There was people moving to the suburbs. There was houses. There was families. And this is, you know, the Beat Generation, and somewhat level, this restlessness that they have is,
yeah,
A, fighting against that, but B, also the idea of going on the road and stuff. Today, somebody who's that age, somebody who's in their 20s, somebody who's in their 30s, somebody who's a teenager, they could Google anything, see a picture of anything that they want to. Does that restlessness, does that energy that they were, that was balled up in them, does that still resonate with people today?
I think so. The idea of moving and seeing, even in a time when we have access to more content than we can process. There is something about, going to different places, you know, seeing new things. I mean, Kerouac, anybody from New England, thinks California is paradise because they get palm trees. He wanted to get to the other side. I think it does resonate. And, Kerouac is like Thoreau in a sense where, particularly for younger persons whose eyes are, opening wider to the world and the complexities of the world, but also who still have some sort of idealism, these people sort of find, they discover Kerouac. That's why, On the Road continues to sell, 100,000 copies a year.
Like Catcher in the Rye, it's an iconic book, particularly if you're young. And if you're growing up in a suburb, as Paul says, even if you have access to all the Google in the world, you're growing up in a suburb and somebody plants the idea in your head, you can get up and you can get out of here, man. I think that idea still resonates. I have a 13-year-old son and I know he's itching to kind of go,
Yeah. So I asked Tony, who played the Buck character that's based on Jack, about if there was a moment in the play for him that he really sort of felt like, there's Kerouac. That's the character. I've connected with him. I've hit it. And here's what he said. He talked about a moment at the end of the play.
He decides at the end, things not going well. I'm going to do this. And he describes what his next move in life is going to be. And he talks about what it means to him to sleep in a sleeping bag under the stars. And that it's not that he's just trying to live the life of a vagabond, it just has such deeper meaning for him to wake up under the stars and to know that he's just alive in a big, beautiful world. Hmm. I don't know, it just says so much about him. For whatever he was looking for in life, that this was his best way to assure himself that, that life was still good. And I guess we all are looking for something like that, so...
Paul, is that, does he get it? Does he capture it?
I think so. And, I mean, people should go to see this play in the next couple of days, if only, you know, for the last 10 minutes. I mean, it just transports you. And I think everybody at MRT just did a terrific job, bringing this together. And the ending image is one that will stay with people.
Speaking of restlessness, right before he sleeps under the stars, though, he says, I'm going through the Holland Tunnel. I'm gone. I'm leaving. I'm going out west.
Yeah.
So the restlessness remains and as he leaves his friend Milo behind.
Yeah. So this is this play is part of a larger festival that happens every couple years in Lowell. This is a Jack Kerouac Literary Festival, and this is the 90th anniversary. This would be his 90th birthday year.
90th birthday
year.
This year, yeah.
What else?
Yeah.
Real quick before I let you guys go, Paul, what else is happening at this festival?
Yeah, well, today, actually in a couple of hours, Ann Waldman, the poet and also co-founder of the Kerouac Writing School at Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado, is going to be reading and performing at the university. Tomorrow afternoon, David Kaiser from MIT, who wrote a book called How the Hippies Saved Physics, you know, speaking of sleeping under the stars, he's going to be speaking on campus. There's also film Saturday morning. There's a panel discussion about travel writing, comparing Charles Dickens and Kerouac, because we've got a terrific exhibit about Charles Dickens at the National Park Service Museum in Lowell. And right adjacent to the exhibit, there's going to be this panel discussion. David Amram is going to be performing music, you know, three or four times. Like I said, there's films, there's open mics, there's tours of Kerouac Lowell. There's like 20, from today on, there's about 25 events, that are going on.
So lots of stuff for those who are big fans of Kerouac. Real quick before I let you go, Charles, what's your pitch, very quickly, to those who are maybe not a big fan yet? Why should they come see the show?
You have to listen to Kerouac. You have to just come listen to Kerouac.
There you go. That's Charles Towers, Artistic Director of the Merrimack Repertory Theater, and also with me by phone has been Paul Marion, Executive Director of the Office of Community and Cultural Affairs at UMass Lowell. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Boston Public Radio today.
Thank you, Edgar.
Thanks so much for having us on.
And of course, as I said, a stage reading of Beat Generation. The first ever theatrical run for this piece is going on right now through October 14th at the Merrimack Repertory Theater. More information about that and the rest of the 2012 Jack Kerouac Literary Festival are available on our website, wgbhnews.org. And there she is, Callie Crossley, a vision, back in the studio with me here.
Hi, Edgar. Well, we're going to jump off Kerouac's road and hop back onto the campaign trail with more 30 issues in 30 days election coverage. Housing for the elderly is on tap today.
It will really be quite quiet on that trail, Callie. That is one issue we haven't really heard a lot about, so it'll be great to hear something on it. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.